Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 265 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host once again. And today my guest is Hinan Landa. Now, Hinan is a friend of mine from the Washington, D.C. area. And as you'll hear, we met through CADRE, an organization that I have spoken about on this program before. Hinan is also the CEO of Optimal Networks and has written a book called The Modern Law Firm. And as you might be able to tell from the book title, Hinan's company, Optimal Networks, is primarily focused on helping the technology needs and the networking needs of law firms. And we have a pretty wide-ranging conversation here about technology and kind of a global overarching view of what role that plays in the development of a law firm, and more specifically, how it addresses the needs of the client. So it's more client-facing from that perspective. So it's a great conversation, if I do say so myself. I really enjoyed spending some time with Hinan on the microphone here, and I hope you enjoy it as well. So without any further delay, here is Hinan Landa. Hinan Landa, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Well, Hinan, I'm delighted to have you with us today for our audience's benefit. Hinan and I have been friends for quite some time through an organization called CADRE, which I've spoken about many times on the podcast. CADRE, run by the inestimable duo of Derek and Melanie Coburn here in the D.C. area. But Hinan, enough about that. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Oh, wow. That's a huge question to start with.
Well, we only have an hour and a half.
It sounds good to me. and thumbs up on CADRE too. I'm very, very pleased to be part of that. So I came here when I was 2.5 from Israel, and that's about as far back as I'll go. And I made my mom very proud going to Johns Hopkins to get an electrical engineering computer science degree, and then the Wharton School of Business in Pennsylvania, where I actually, there I wrote the business plan for Optimal Networks, which is the company I've been running for 3 decades now. And we're very, very focused on helping lawyers and law firms with their IT. And we're located here in Maryland, serving the whole Metro DC area and then some.
Did Optimal Networks always start out as a legal technology company, or did you kind of hone in on that through a variety of different events?
Definitely honed in on that. You know, we started out, I mean, this was the early 90s, so I don't think we actually even knew what we were doing at the beginning. But over time, as you begin to provide IT support in the DC metro area, there's really just a lot of law firms around here. I heard recently that 1 in 9 lawyers is in the DC metro area.
That's not surprising. I used to tell the story, you can't swing a dead cat without knocking over a slew of attorneys.
Right. So, you know, so we got really focused in on, and what I find with lawyers is if you're able to provide good service, they make phenomenal clients. They're really, really bright people and doing good work. And we like it a lot.
Well, it's a real target of opportunity, I think, for you at that time, too, because in the 90s and, you know, the decade that followed, you know, there was a lot of variety in terms of hardware solutions and networking capabilities, and law firms in particular, attorneys specifically, this was all Greek to them. Mm-hmm. They had no idea how to plug these pieces together to provide a, not to use a bad pun here, an optimal network.
Feel free.
And so it was a great time to be in that space.
Without a doubt. And law firms in particular are one of the industries that, wow, when they're taking advantage of technology, it's night and day. It's they can really lean in and they can attract clients better. They can keep their clients better, provide better service, you know, retain their employees, retain their partners. If you're a law firm and you put your focus on technology, like the sky is the limit. And lawyers, I think, especially back then, viewed technology as a cost center.
Yeah.
And we're trying to minimize it, sort of kick it out the door. And it was a real pleasure to be able to kind of show them how it could really be used better.
And at the same time, there were an awful lot of folks who felt like somehow technology was infringing upon their ability to provide legal services. It made them turn their attention away from good lawyering to dealing with how to make Word perfect support the office better, when, you know, it couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, I had attorneys who took great pride in saying, I don't even know how to turn on the computer. You know, my legal secretary does that for me. Yeah, I just practice law.
Yeah, because traditionally, that's what it was like, right? It was the typewriter was not something the attorney wanted to deal with.
Right.
Well, just dictate. Remember dictation machines?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. You know, so traditionally, that was the way things were done. And yes, there was status. And, you know, you would review the drafts and you'd mark them up and you'd hand them back to your legal secretary. That's all changed. Yeah. I mean, which is, see what, wow, you know, it's actually interesting because I know we haven't gotten to the book, but in the book, I do like a retrospective to 20 years back and what it looked like. And there was a lot of that. And compared to what's happening now, it's a kind of, it blows your mind a little bit.
Well, as long as we're on that retrospective look back, I mean, I think one of the other fortuitous opportunities for you at the time was, as you said, you're working here in the Washington, D.C. area. There were lots of multinational firms or firms that were nationally based at the very least. So they had a vested interest in being able to capitalize on technology in order to remain competitive. And the view from the solo and small firms and even mid-sized firms was, well, technology is for the big guy, it's not for me. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, where we have seen the major seismic shift, because technology now is not only accessible to the solo and small firm practitioner, it's critical.
It's 100% critical. And there were some attorneys, even in the 90s, 2000s, who saw that and as a solo practitioners actually invested a ton in their own technology, and they really came out ahead. They were able to serve their clients better. Well, I remember my attorney who actually has gone from being in a firm to being solo and to being in another firm. At the time, probably in the late 90s and mid 2000s, he was a solo practice. And he invested thousands and thousands of dollars in having us set up his machine so that he could really treat it as his assistant. Everything from Dragon Naturally Speaking to
right.
The email to the, and he really made it work for him. It was very impressive.
Well, now we come to where we are today, where, you know, even your four-year-old knows how to use the iPad better than most attorneys knew how to use technology at the time. And that gives rise to understanding where the role that technology plays in the provision of legal services, and particularly to the client's journey with you as an attorney. And I know that in your book, which let's go ahead and make mention of it. The book's called The Modern Law Firm. And I want to talk about how that came to be in a moment. But I know in your book, you talk about the four pillars mm-hmm. of exceptional customer service. I've always held up our friend Joey Coleman as being the godfather of customer service. Mm-hmm. Joey Coleman, for our listeners, if you've not known, wrote a book called Never Lose a Customer Again. to me, the quintessential book ever written on customer service. But I note that in the four pillars of, that you describe in your book, how that tracks very closely and really is more focused on law firms. And so talk to us a little bit about that and how you came to kind of organize your thinking in that regard.
No, that would be great. So when I first wrote this book, it was, I guess it still is, a call to action for law firms, because I really felt that on the whole, law firms were lagging in technology, and they weren't seeing two things. They weren't seeing the potential of technology, but they also weren't paying attention to the fact that technology was growing exponentially. Right. And it wasn't going away, right? So you're just, and I used to think that I was going to have to explain, I was going to spend most of my time talking about exponential growth, but apparently the coronavirus did that for me.
Yeah.
So I don't have to talk about that anymore. But, you know, it's really wave after wave of technology where you see like processor speeds increasing, doubling every 18 months and the software doubling and improving and the cloud and this. And you start looking at the differences and between now and then, 20 years ago and what's happening, that the rate is just increasing and increasing, and that the law firms not paying attention to this are going to get buried. They're going to get overrun. And so the idea was, and still is, let's put our shoulder to it. Let's stop looking at technology as something to be feared and to push back upon, like you were saying earlier, and instead, let's embrace it. So what's the best way to embrace it? Let's look at it as a way to improve the client experience.
Yeah.
That was the thinking that brought me to the four pillars. You want me to go into them a little
bit?
Yeah,
yeah. To my guest.
So, and by the way, before I do that, I will say that the pandemic taught us another lesson, because so many lawyers and law firms picked up and went home that they did a massive and wonderful job of adopting a lot of technology in a short period of time.
It proved to people that it can be done.
Correct.
You know, I think there were so many people that were, you know, contemplating, thinking about it, or, you know, I need to move away from the server model and get more cloud-based for a number of different reasons, or I need to be able to provide some remote capability to some of my staff, but I just haven't got around to it. And then boom, the pandemic hits. Now you gotta.
And people did. And they not only moved to the cloud, but they started video conferencing like all the time. And they started using better communications tools like Microsoft Teams and Slack. And really wonderful to see the adoption. So we proved it was possible.
Right.
So the pillars look like this. Like, I'm looking at this from the point of view of the client. If I'm a client, one of the main things I want is responsiveness from my attorney. Right, we've all now become consumers, right? We click on our app, for our Uber Eats app, and we want our food to show up, and we want to see it as it's coming, right? We want things quickly. One of the things technology can do is give us that ability to communicate quickly with our clients. And I want to be clear about this. It doesn't mean you have to be on 24/7.
Right.
But it does mean that you have the option. So if you are standing in a grocery line, can you get your, I mean, now everyone can, thank God, but, you know, can you get a little bit of work done while you're sitting there waiting in line? Can you look? Can you respond to a client? If you want to, you don't have to. But I think that idea of being able to respond, not just quickly, but also from any place that you are, right? So it's that element of responsiveness that you can bring to the table. There's also an element of being part of your client's communication network. So, for example, my company, Optimal Networks, we use Slack. We're heavy duty Slack users, which means we communicate with each other like this. I mean, I'm snapping here because I can come across in the audio. you know, we're very quick. Like, we don't have time to sit and watch email chains slowly go by as people have time to respond to them. We're very fast on the instant messaging. My attorney now is part of our Slack instance, communicates with us inside of Slack. That's responsive,
right? Yeah. And I think another area where you see that shifting is, you know, it used to be that you communicated, or your attorney communicated with the client via snail mail.
Right.
And then, you know, eventually it was a phone call. And finally we got to email. Mm-hmm. And now most of my clients, younger clients, admittedly, are like, yeah, I don't really use email anymore. Can you message me? Can you text me? Yeah. And so your client communications responsiveness has to incorporate how the client expects that communication to be conducted.
Yeah, it's exactly right. It's the speed of response. It's the completeness of response. And it is the venue, right? And in sales, we've been taught for years that we have to communicate the way the client wants to be communicated with, and in service too, right? So if the client is someone who uses the phone a lot, you want to call them. And if they text, you want to text them, because that makes them feel much more connected to you.
Today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. For many years, marketing companies have focused on funnels that run for a short time, often leaving dozens of leads behind that didn't make a decision yet. Spotlight Branding has found a better way. It's called a content loop, and it's changing the way attorneys think about their marketing. This system nurtures your leads in perpetuity with quality, evergreen content that elevates your credibility and helps the rest of your marketing actually work. If you're interested in learning more, head over to spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur, to learn more about the content loop and how it can revolutionize your law firm's marketing. Spotlight Branding, more referrals, better clients, higher return on investment. Now, if you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. And this episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the all-in-one contact relationship manager, or CRM. I've been using Daylight for well over 10 years now, and it's the best CRM for business on the Mac and iPhone. And despite having a case management platform that I'm very happy with, I still use Daylight to handle all of my many other law firm needs. When you're running your own law firm, it can be difficult to stay on top of follow-ups, keep track of details and communication, and stay aware of what needs to be done next on each project. Daylight organizes everything in one place, so you don't have to rely on your memory to keep it all straight. If you're feeling like it's time to upgrade from spreadsheets to a CRM, check out Daylight. You can download it from the App Store or visit www.marketcircle.com and try it free for 30 days. On top of that, you can get your first month free when you tell them you heard about Daylight here on The Law Entrepreneur. Daylight by Market Circle, staying top of mind without the stress. And let's talk about expertise then. Yeah. I know that's another aspect of the pillars of client communication. And, you know, expertise for many attorneys for most years was, are you good at being an attorney? Do you know the practice area that you are advocating within? Are you a recognized expert in that? For the vast majority of clients, they can't really tell the difference. And so their evaluation of you as an expert is based on other things.
It is. And it's things that technology can help with. Like,
exactly.
Can you actually locate information quickly and easily? Can you actually bring to bear other people in your firm as needed and what the knowledge that they have in an intelligent, rapid fashion? Those are things that technology can help with. Like if you're using a document management system, that becomes a compendium of your knowledge as a firm, right? If you're using a communication system like Teams or something, you can quickly reach out to other folks in your firm, other lawyers who have specializations, and bring them into the conversation. And like, I don't mean to sound like everything is about speed, but if you can do it effectively, you come across as an expert.
Right. And clients expect you to have a, you know, professional rules of responsibility also expect you to have a minimum level of technical competency, but clients are even dictating something more than just the minimum level. You know, now most of the practice management platforms like Clio, like Practice Panther and others, mm-hmm. you know, now they're providing for client portals. Mm-hmm. Because clients want to be able to see the documents that you're working on,
yeah.
see the activity that you're participating in on their behalf. They want visibility into it. And your level of expertise in terms of how you deploy the technology to make that possible is an aspect of the client service relationship that you're being evaluated on.
100%. I've seen it go to extremes too, you know, where people want to literally co-author a document with you.
Yeah. Well,
that's I don't know how
to put the reins on them a little bit.
I don't know that I would let them, but if they, you know, you see them asking for it because they're used to doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And particularly it depends on, you know, kind of client. If you have a client who is hands-on and works in that technology sphere and is writing documents, they want to be able to take advantage of it. And I'll give you a couple of perfect examples. One driven by a friend of ours, another member of a cadre. You know, when I was working with him, Zvi Band, you know, at that point, I hadn't yet incorporated electronic signatures mm-hmm. into my workflow. And I sent him a retainer agreement. Zvi said, "What, Neil, you're a technology guy. You spent 20 years doing this. You don't have electronic signature capability." He shamed me into it. I had to implement it the next week.
Yeah.
So clients drive that oftentimes as well. If you have a client who their job is marking up documents and collaboratively working on documents, you better know how to use the change feature in Microsoft Word.
Right. We have clients who are, you know, law firms who are whose clients demand security audits before they're willing to work with the law firm.
Right.
And that's another piece of it.
That's another piece of it. I was going to talk to you about that in terms of, you know, demonstrating the results. Another pillar of the approach defined in your book. You have to be able to show effectiveness in your firms in terms of file security, right?
Yep. You do. And it's a look, it's again, it's another question of the client driving some of the expectations of the firm.
Right.
Right. And so that's really important. As far as the results go, I have a really interesting story about this. I worked with an attorney for many, many years and used him quite a bit in the early days for collections. And it didn't happen that often, but every time I had to use him to collect bills with a client, he had a 100% win rate. By the way, this is before we were working exclusively with law firms, come to think of it.
Right.
He had literally a 100. There was never a time when I asked him to help me on something like this that he did not find a way to get the money that was owed to us. And that is spectacular. And what I was thinking in terms of results is that I don't even think he knew that he had a 100% win rate with us.
Right.
And if that was something that other potential clients of his knew, they'd probably use him for that too.
And you see that, I mean, I get asked on occasion, well, how many trust-based estate plans have you done?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you better know the answer. You can't say, well, it's somewhere around 100, 120. No, you need to know.
Yeah, right? And this is something you can track. You can track it for internal right. purposes. You can track it for external purposes. I know there's some laws around marketing this type of stuff, so I think you have to be careful. But this is something technology can help you with. Technology can help you track results.
Well, if for no other reason to help you run your business, you need to be able to track results. But there is also, from the client-facing perspective, there is reason to be able to understand those statistics and accurately articulate them to potential clients.
Yeah.
The last part of the pillars that I want to talk about is your discussion. And I thought this was pretty interesting. It's how to accommodate innovation. and yeah. that your approach to the use of technology can't just be backward looking or present minded. It has to be forward looking as well with respect to innovation down the line.
Right. So there's two sides to this. So you definitely want to realize that technology is moving forward, and you want to find a way to have an eye on it, both in terms of your internal operations and in terms of what might be valuable to your clients. And so I'll look at the first one first. This is the kind of thing, if you're looking at technology to improve your operations, you can have your IT people do it. You know, you can hire people to do it. You can just have someone keeping an eye on this kind of stuff. This is the stuff where if you realize that security is more and more important to your clients, then, you know, maybe you better get off of Dropbox and get onto something a little bit more secure, right? That kind of thing. That's just, or is there a better way to communicate, or is there a better way to work, or what can I do to improve my firm's operations and therefore our ability to serve our clients? That is one track of innovation. The other track of innovation is, what technologies are my clients going to be interested in, using in, and is there any value in learning about those technologies and maybe even becoming, you know, some, like maybe even opening up a practice area there, or becoming an expert in those technologies and the legal ramifications of those technologies so that your clients can count on you. You know, you start talking about something like, you know, all the automatic driving cars. Well, you could foresee some artificial intelligence issues that are going to turn into legal battles. And if that's where your clients were, that's something to look at.
Let's shift our thinking here a little bit, or the discussion. And, you know, because I can see for a lot of folks, they're saying, well, all that's well and true, Neil and Hinan, but how do I go about structuring my way of thinking here? How do I implement a larger plan with respect to technology? Is there a process, or is there kind of a overarching philosophy on how to incorporate or improve my technology, or do I just kind of whittle away at it one piece at a time?
The answer is sort of both. You do want to whittle away at it, but you want to do it in the context of a bigger plan. I'll give this a plug in the book. I put together a model. It's a 14-point model. It's like a pyramid, and it's called your technology operational maturity level. And the idea here—
Kind of like a self-evaluation?
Self-evaluation. And it's in the book, and it's also on the book website if you want to take it electronically, which is modernlawfirmbook.com, and it's just there for you. It's not technical particularly. It's more of it's more procedural, and it's more business-oriented, so I don't think you really need to send it to a tech person. You just go on there and answer the questions, because what we've done is we looked at all of the high-performing, all of the law firms that are high-performing in technology, and we pulled out what that looks like. And so for every one of 14 questions, we have some traits that a law firm that is high-performing in technology does. And it might have to do with how you support your attorneys with technology. It might have to do with security. It might, you know, all those different elements of technology. And so you can give yourself a score. And it's just a simple score from 0 to 3. And your job is to sort of reevaluate on an annual basis and just make sure that you're picking up that score. And it tells you where to start on the bottom of the pyramid and what to pay attention to. And you work your way up, so that at the top of the pyramid, you can worry about things like innovation and strategy and those sorts of things. And on the bottom of the pyramid, you can make sure your systems are secure and functioning and supported.
Well, that's a great methodology. I like that, because I'm always a little hesitant to take self-evaluations because I have an inflated idea of how worthy I am. And when I do the evaluation, I find out that I'm not that good. So I guess that's a little eye-opener, self-truth that I need to digest. But I like that approach because, you know, a lot of times we can't see the forest for the trees. So we might be thinking, well, I have to figure out how to implement a cloud-based system. and get away from this local server model. That's a pretty global kind of concept to deal with. And maybe there's some things you need to address before that in terms of, say, what is your approach to using the hardware? Are you providing hardware to all your employees, or are you expecting them to use their own hardware and integrate with your systems? And those are some fundamental pieces you have to answer first before you start exploring cloud options.
Right. And, you know, if they're providing their own systems, do you have the right to secure those systems?
Yeah, which, by the way, I don't think it's a real good idea to do, just in general.
So our recommendation in general is to provide the hardware if you can.
Right.
Because that way it's yours and you can secure it and you can get it back if something goes wrong.
Exactly. Exactly.
But as far as this model goes, we're actually, there's a bunch of, well, so you can read about in the book, there's a bunch of explainer stuff on the book website, but also this is what we help our clients with, and we do full evaluations for them. So in your case, Neil, we could help you so you don't have to worry about your own self-worth.
Good. Then I have somebody else to blame, right?
Exactly.
I said, Elon and Optimal Networks have scored me poorly, but
yeah.
Now I have to prove them wrong.
Yeah. And listen, in most cases, the key is not so much your score, but the fact that you're working to improve it.
Yeah.
And not to get overwhelmed, but to just pick the important stuff and just start moving it forward.
So speaking of moving forward, looking forward, hopefully we are starting to rebound from this long nightmare that we've been in for the last year, year and a half. It seems that way, a knock on wood. Some things have changed in the legal community as a result of the pandemic. They're never going back. What's your thoughts about going forward, technology going forward, and what's this going to look like for the modern firm?
So there has been, and I can't find the statistic real quick, but there are a lot of lawyers and law firms that have fallen in love with this idea of remote work. It's a very high percentage of people who still would like to work remotely, at least some of the time, if not all the time. So if I project that out a little bit, I think our offices become a little less important and become start taking on a different meaning. It may not be the place where we go and we sit and we work for a day quietly. It may be the place where we go and we have meetings with other people in our firm and with clients. But so people will be going to the office and also home. And some of the people will be in the office and some of the people will be home. And it's going to rotate and it's not going to be the same people. And of course, we got to give a lot of thought to this and how we're going to plan it and make it the most effective. But from a technology point of view, your technology has to work great in both places. And I say this because a lot of folks picked up their technology from the office and took it home. And they've been working at home for the past year, year and a half, right? And if they go to the office, they don't work very well. Like I was a little bit like that. I went to the office when the pandemic started. I grabbed my huge monitor and I brought it home, and my docking station, and I brought it home. And so now I'm really comfortably set up at home. When I go to the office, for a long time, I had to just work on, like, poke away at my laptop when I went there like once or twice a month. And that wasn't very comfortable. Other people have a setup at home, but when they're at home, they have to go through like all these complicated VPNs and security. And then finally, slowly, they can access the one or two files they need off of the server. That's not good either. You want to get into a situation with your technology that you are just as comfortable working home or office, or frankly, anywhere. This is totally possible. There's a bunch of ways to do it.
Right.
There's the concept of virtual desktops, which means you can use any machine and just pop open your work desktop. There's the concept of using a laptop with cloud applications, and you can just access anything from anywhere as long as you got that laptop. Whatever you choose, it's really got to work in any place that you want to work.
And I will also add, I think personally, it needs to work with all the tools at your disposal. So
absolutely,
not just your laptop. It's got to work with your tablet and with your smartphone. And pretty soon, you know, some of the newer things coming down the road. I'm thrilled that I can actually conduct a Zoom call in my car.
Yeah. <That's> true.
Like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing since sliced cheese. And I think we're going to see more and more of that. To your point about the office environment, I think the office environment now is going to become just the hub for our operations, which is, I'm going to pine about that a little bit. Because I remember when I first started my practice, a lot of what I did was defined about what I wanted my office to look like, mm-hmm. right? I had this romantic notion of physically what I wanted my office to look like and how I thought that conveyed a sense of authority to my clients. And now, gee, that wet bar in my office doesn't seem so important anymore.
No, but you know what is important is your website.
Yeah.
And your social media presence and how that looks like to your potential and current customers.
Far more important than whether or not you have a leather couch.
Yeah.
Yeah. And on tell our audience where they can get the book. Let's plug the name of it again. It's called The Modern Law Firm. Where can they get the book? Where can they log in to get more information about the book? And how can they reach out to you if they want to know more about Optimal Networks?
Oh, happy to plug. So the book's website is www.modernlawfirmbook.com. And right there, you have links to Amazon. They can get it in hard copy, which is very pretty. And they can get it Kindle and Audible. I had a blast reading the book. So any which way you want to get the book, you can get it there, modernlawfirmbook.com. And then if you want to learn more about my company, it's optimalnetworks.com. That's with an S at the end. And my email, any, you guys are welcome to reach out to me, hlanda@optimalnetworks.com, or find me on LinkedIn, however you'd like to.
Perfect. Well, we'll have all of that in the show notes and on. And listen, it's great having you on. It's been a wonderful time catching up.
Total pleasure.
And I hope that everybody gets something out of the discussion. I know I did. And I look forward to revisiting this when the next volume, when the next book comes out.
The Moderner Law Firm?
more Moderner, right. Exactly.
Thank you so much, Neil. This is
Thanks wonderful. Again for being a guest on The Law Entrepreneur. Well, there you have it, Law Entrepreneurs. Thanks for being with us today and with this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors, as usual, Ruby Receptionists, Daylight, and Spotlight Branding. Make sure you swing on by our website at thelawentrepreneur.com or visit our Facebook page or Twitter account. You can find us anywhere by just searching on The Law Entrepreneur. Also, if you'd be kind enough, I'd love it if you could go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and a review. It helps with our visibility and it helps ensure that we're there to be found when people come looking for podcasts in the legal space. So once again, thanks for being a part of today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur.